Dharma class?
Not always, but every Dharma class usually. Declaration. You know the word, English word declaration? To declare? Yeah. Declaration of compassion. That's good. Sets the right tone. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. For sake of all beings, wisdom, compassion, and non-clinging awareness. Meditating and wishing that all beings are free of suffering. And also dedicating one's activities for the liberation of all beings. Om mani padme hum, 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 om mani padme hum. Quite extraordinary. You know, a very wonderful thing to do, anyways, just a wonderful, wonderful thing to do, to straighten out the karma, karmic activity formations of a mind that really wishes to awaken, is 600,000 chenrezigs. Go into retreat. Or if you're not in retreat, give yourself 3 months, and to do 600,000 chenrezigs as a dedication to say, this is the work of compassion and wisdom. It's good. It's a really good thing. This is how I started. When I was a teenager, we heard that Kala Rinpoche was coming to town. He didn't give teachings unless you did 600,000 chenrezig, just like that. No teachings. See, unless you declare you are on about compassion, forget it. So we just did it. Just get ready. 600,000 chenrezigs. Because he was from the old school, you know? If you can't do that, you can't do anything. It's good. It straightens things out, gets things,
helps a little bit,
you know. Maybe doing that 5 or 6 or 10 or 20 times would help more, but at least it's a statement. It's good. It's a good statement. Do you have any questions this morning before I speak a little bit about the progress of insight, how insight unfolds from this meditation? But if you have any, I like your questions. Very good. Very, very insightful. Yes.
Is there anything about water? Because yesterday it was like a spray, and it felt like when you're under the water and the water comes in, and then my it produces the whole meditation liquid, so I had to swallow and swallow.
Yeah, it's very common, very common. I just swallowed. Yeah, this is the beginning, one of the signs of baptism. You know baptism? The liquid. And you can have a lot of saliva dripping down the throat, especially if you have coffee before meditation. I've had times when, like right now, it's so sweet in my mouth. I've only had this much coffee this morning, just a little bit. And it's just a beautiful taste. And if I sit and meditate, I will probably swallow. So it's actually very common to have periods of time when it just drips down the throat. And that can lead someday to, there's a place in the palate and here, which is a nerve or meridian, acupuncture meridian, that leads up into here, into the head, that can drip liquid, like the most beautiful nectar. You know nectar? Like Chateau Yquem. But better. And can drip down. And other kinds of things. And of course the dripping from here can drip down. These are all to do with signs of the unfolding. People just think the baptism, but the unfolding of the baptism, which is the meaning for initiation or wongkor. Wong is baptism. There's different kinds of baptisms. But the first baptism that's needed is the down-going baptism of the waters for purification. And you can have lots of crying. You're even liquid coming out of the ears. All kinds of things to do with the down-going energy, the purification coming down. Even having to pee a lot. Pee every 10 minutes, 15 minutes. Even if you're not drinking lots of water, just pee, 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 pee. Yeah. Yeah. And can get very, very beautiful and strong. Yeah. Any others? Somebody else had a question?
It's really just a question about... difficult to frame this question. Well, it's quite simple. I'll try. It's about putting a conscious thought into the process when you're in a state of absorption.
Can't.
And whether that is another distraction, another formation, or whether it helps.
In theory, if the consciousness is really an absorption, there can be no thought. You couldn't have a thought. Some people would say that at the first stages of absorption, you can have a thought occasionally, vitakka vichara. Others, no. not going to debate that point. It's not worth it. What often happens, though, is if there is real see, I have a term which I've invented. And I call it pseudo-absorption. You know the word pseudo? No? Pseudo. Yeah?
Seemingly.
Mm-hmm. There is a seemingly jhana, which has all the qualities of jhana, but is not full jhana. Not to put anybody down, but it's very normal. So you can have bliss and no thought, but you see, full jhana, I believe from just so many interviews and so much, yeah, I wish I had practiced more in my life. Practice, a little bit of practice in my life, and study and so on, is that parallel to full jhana, there is pseudo jhana, like what I call pseudo jhana, which is good, actually good, very good meditation, but it's not full. And it's not fully rich. By the time you get to sukha, mind is filled with happy. You will be no thoughts. But what happens? You can train to do this too. Is you can train your mind to go in jhana and out of jhana, in jhana, out of jhana. So if you have a thought, you're out of jhana. You're out of absorption. If you come back to the concentration, well, you can go right back in. Now, is it useful? It's only useful for purposes of contemplation. Because the quality of jhana absorption is such that it makes the mind very pliable. Do you know what pliable? Can move, it can bend, it can stretch. Flexible. Very flexible. It's open. It's joyous. It can entertain anything. So in that sense it's very good, but you have to be careful what you introduce, because in the quality of jhana, the mind is very strong. So be careful what you introduce into that. This is the problem with people that follow the path of jhana, excuse me. Oh, excuse it. If you follow the path of jhana, the mind gets very strong, which means then you try to do all kinds of things, but if there is not sufficient purification, watch out. Because you try to gain power. You do things that are about power and control, because the mind is very strong, or accomplishment. But it may not be Dharma. So one has to be careful what you are thinking about or what you're doing in our jhana. So in theory, the best thing that you could train yourself to do is to contemplate the qualities of insight of Vipassana while emerging from jhana or before jhana.
But how do you, I mean, do you have to pre-program yourself? So you say, okay, what I'm going to hope to do now is in a state of absorption, I'm going to observe.
No, in a state of absorption, you don't observe anything. There's no observing.
But then how do you do the inside stuff?
Okay.
Does it happen?
Good question. You train by practicing rise and fall, investigating anicca, or investigating dukkha, or investigating anatta. Okay? That's with with a clear, mindful mind. You want to say to yourself that when there is absorption, immediately after the mind will revert to contemplating anicca, dukkha, anatta, not how blissful you are. And not like this. Oh, I feel so good.
Investigate rise and fall, rise and fall, rise and fall. Do you see? Because the mind is now flushed of the five hindrances. So it is a method of washing. It's a method of highly developed removal of the five hindrances. So the mind is extremely sharp and lucid immediately afterwards, or for hours. Then the meditation is very, very smooth and clear. That's the purpose of it. That's the purpose. Besides psychic powers. The other way you go is psychic powers. Is then you practice psychic powers. There's two things that you do with jhana. Either use it, as it is in this case, in this text, you use it for development of insight, not while in jhana, out of jhana. It's only to get washed, like a baptism, you get washed. You get washed. You feel lucid. Anything's possible. Mind is steady like a rock, but a beautiful rock, like a mountain, like a flame, perfectly steady flame, for hours, maybe days. Therefore, insight is really good. Or you go the route of psychic powers, which can be walking on water, descending through the earth, going through walls, making flames, or studying, having great memory, capacity for fantastic memory. Maybe you read a text and then you have it memorized. Or you have deep understanding. Your mind is very quick in terms of understanding. Or for the ability to read other beings' minds. Or the ability to experience past lifetimes. Or the ability to know things about beings and why they are what they are. But you see, that can easily go to power if there's not purification. Easily becomes defiled. And for many thousands of people, it's all they do then, is they go towards games with jhana, because the mind feels so good. It feels like it can do anything. Accumulate money, all kinds of things, but not dharma.
So, insight, that's the recollection then, is what was going on there.
Yeah. So when it comes to, another way is you can practice, is then you turn the mind on the bliss. What is this experience of bliss? Not that there is bliss. What is bliss's nature? This settled, clear, resplendent mind of no thought. What is it? What's its nature? That's Mahamudra. That's what you do. That's how you train in Mahamudra. Good bliss. Completely clear mind. No thought. What is it? It's now. Before, not during. Or when you come out every once in a while, bore in. But not during. You see, this is trust. This is where faith comes in. The Buddha mind already knows what liberation is. That's your wisdom mind. Not your wisdom mind, that's wisdom mind. That wisdom mind is part of every single being. That's intelligence. So the intelligence of Buddha mind already knows what liberation is. So all you really need to do is step out of the way, investigate. This is in the Christian mystical tradition, this is the contemplation of, I wish to have revelation. You see, if you don't wish to have revelation, you don't get revelation. This is the secret method of the Christian mystic, you see. Is you're not allowed to ask for revelation, because revelation comes from God. But you pray that revelation happens, so God blesses you. It's kind of a funny thing, you see? Never knowing when revelation will come. It's exactly the same. You never know when the mind will reveal the mind. Or in the case of Christian mystical tradition, God will reveal His majesty. Right? You never know when. But you can, you know the expression, you probably know the English expression, prime the pump. You know when you have a water pump? You know, a water pump? You have to sometimes, especially the old ones, you have to prime it. You have to get it just right so it fills with water. And that could take you hours. Ever tried that? Some of these old pumps? You prime it, you put a little water in, you close it, seal it back up, turn it back on. Right? Hours. You open it up, put a little water in, just get it right. Eventually, if you're lucky, the water gushes out. You have to prime, that's what the expression comes from, priming the pump. Well, we do the same thing. We stack up, now here's another idiom, we stack up the odds. You know, like in gambling, you stack up the odds so the odds get higher. How do you do that? You do a lot of contemplation. You do a lot of prayers, you do a lot of contemplation. So the wisdom mind eventually comes out and gives you the answer. That's what happens. The Buddha mind already knows what Buddha mind is. It's the ego mind, the mind of self-referencing, that needs to merge that one moment, needs to let go and merge and let the clear wisdom mind shine through. It's already there. This is the funny thing. You see, people, until you know this directly, you think it's out there. It comes from outside. But actually, it's right here in the mind as the mind is right now. You just have to let the barrier down long enough for it to come through and tell you the answer. That's what you're doing. So you're really asking a question. You're letting jhana do the work. You just need to let the clear mind do the work and get out of the way. It's the strength of the question and the calm mind that does the work. I tell you, this is really, it's easy. But you have to have a real want for wisdom. Otherwise, the wisdom mind knows you don't want it, really. You know what I mean? I want enlightenment. Yeah, someday I'd like enlightenment. No, every atom of your body has to want enlightenment. It has to prime, the pump has to get primed by enough hours, enough searching, enough commitment, enough trust, enough energy to go, I want it. Every good saint has been, you know, a bit of a problem child in the sense of, I want it. I'm going to get it. And they do. But just not sure when. Some get it fast. Some get it slow. Some get it fast and then have to spend 20 years figuring out what they got. It's a case. Some spend 20 years and then have it. They go, I will never experience God. I will never experience revelation. You know, 20, 30 years later, then they have it. All that comes together. Others, right away. And then they spend all these years finding out what it was that they actually experienced. But you have to ask. If you don't ask, you don't get. And in the spiritual life, you have to break down the doors, basically. You really have to break down the doors for insight. That's why these wrathful beings. Because the blindness, the not wanting, is so thick that you really have to get a bit of energy up to break down the doors. You need calm, you need tranquility, and then you have to wake it up, really wake it up. And this is in Tantra, you see this. It turns out in the Tantric tradition that when it comes to describing the 100 yidams, the 100 deities, meditational deities of the enlightened mind, the majority, just a little bit, 90%, no, not 90, about 65%, yeah, maybe 65% is wrathful, not peaceful. The majority is wrathful, not peaceful. Why? Because insight's more important than peace. So you that wrathfulness is the strength of the question that demands an answer. You step out of the way. What is stepping out of the way? Jhana. You let it do the work. The question's already been asked. How many times do you have to ask the question? You know what I mean? How many times? Only once strong enough. So what we do is we ask it thousands of times. We go in and out. What is the nature of mind? It's okay. It will be answered. So we do all these different meditations, contemplations, meditations, of purification, of opening, of softening, of loosening, of clarity, right? And at some point, the question gets asked really strongly. And eventually, depending on the force of parami and karma, the revelations will happen many times in a lifetime. Many times, not just once. Many times. But sometimes you have to wait months or years. That's just the way it is. It's just the way it is. Westerners are in such a big hurry. If it's not this weekend, I give up. If it's not this week, then it's hopeless. Really, they do. They do. But read the lives of the biography of many saints. 1 year later, you know, they go into retreat. 1 year later, after meditating day and night, 1 year later, the revelation of such and such happened. 3 months later, 6 months later, 3 years later. 3 years. And then completion, or then revelation. Really deep, deep revelation. But there might be 5 or 6 or 10 or 20 little revelations. You don't know. Everybody's different. Some people, they have revelations every day. I know people have visions every day. It does nothing. They walk in, they tell me, I go, get out. Yeah. Wow, and then I saw, and then, oh, wow, and oh, man. I listen to the voice and I go, what's changed? I go, I don't know. Get out. Because they want revelation so badly, they produce it. They've read too many readings of revelations, you know. They've read every book. And, oh yeah. And then the Dharmakaya came and they're using every Dharma buzzword, you know. And then the Dorje came and then it opened up and inside was, you know, Guru. And then. I said, so has anything changed in your being? No. Oh. Well, get out! Because if you once saw a Dorje full on, in full absorption, you'll be blown away. You'll be, I'll know. And you just walk in, you know. Don't even have to say anything. Okay, good. Then the Dorje opened, and inside was a little baby. And then I saw, and then. Which drug did you take? Which drug was that? Too many drugs. Too many movies. Goes on too long. Just get it over with. Whap! You see? So the force of the question, the intensity of the question, the intensity of the longing for liberation is what does it. The training holds it together. The training ripens it. Do you know what I mean? The training is the water and the fertilizer, the compost you put on the soil. And you keep watering it with the strength. That's why in our tradition especially, maybe others too. But the reason why I follow so much teaching, so much, I could just say, okay, we have a retreat, here's the exercise, you come for interviews, see you next week. That's not unusual. Why all the teaching? It's about question. I'm more interested in raising the question, as my teacher did, Namjoon Rinpoche, raising the question. The question is what brings you to God. The word question isn't used normally. They say contemplation or desire for liberation. But actually, it's a question because everybody all day long is walking around with a question. If you go out anywhere, go for a walk, see anybody, you really feel what's going on in their mind. It's nothing but question. That's all a human being does, as far as I'm concerned. You know what I mean? Let's say if I was an anthropologist, which I've been trained that way. What is a human being up to all day long? What does it do? It does nothing but ask questions. It worries about questions. That's why anxiety is there. Too much anxiety, too much worry about the question. The art of meditation, the art of contemplation, is to worry, have anxiety about God, have anxiety about Buddha nature, and then let it go. Let the mind be completely clear and calm, and let the wisdom mind work, the baptism, the initiation. Let it come. Get out of the way. All this work, get out of the way. Let it just come to you. Let it come. Go for a walk. Some of the best revelations happen in life when you do lots of meditation and you go for a walk, go for a car ride, you go to the city, you go to the toilet, you make a meal, you lay down. You're opening your glasses. You walk across the door, all these kinds of things, because you've let go completely. Unexpected. It's a mystery. It's just a mystery. So you do everything you can to set the scene. I don't know if you know what that's. To set the environment as rich as possible, the best possibility for revelation. That's the nature of the church. The church, the temple, the cathedral, the holy room is to set the stage, the theater of the mind, so everything is good for the mind to let go into revelation. Insight is revelation, but it's already there. It's like when a student asks me a question, they already know. They already know the answer. I know that. The answer is already known. Not you, necessarily, but the answer is already known. I know that. It's just... So, the process is you use jhana to wash the mind. And that means it's really clear to allow the question to come through. That's why I recommend many people, when they get to a certain point, they've done lots of years of meditation, they need to learn to contemplate. They need to learn to contemplate. They need to learn to raise the question really high. Find a question they're really interested in. That is some of the biggest problem that I see with people that are in the spiritual awakening life, is they really don't have a big question. Do you know what I mean? They don't have a big enough question. You know, when you go to do a PhD, you know, PhD, a doctorate in science or arts, and even sometimes for a master's degree, used to be, not anymore so much, but for a master's degree, you had to write an essay or a paper that said what the question is, to spell out 5-6 years of research of how you're going to do it, but what the question is, and prove to the professor that you know where you're going, even though you don't know the answer, that you have done your homework, and that the question is strong enough to do something new with your mind.
So this is pre-doctorate?
Before
you're allowed to do it?
Well, they've let you in.
They've let you in,
you've done your exams, and now they say, take 3, 6 months, 9 months to write the preliminary document to see where you're going to go, to make sure it's actually you have a plan.
See, this is where you find out what the question is and do all the research.
That's
and
right.
Reading and all that.
That's right. And the thesis advisor, the teacher, is going to say, well, that's too big. You'll never do it. That's too small. That's been done. That's been done. This is worthy. This could be done in 4 or 5 years. Thoroughly. This you won't get away with. This you won't. They're wrong sometimes. That's the beauty of it. This is not worthy to work on. It's too hard, or it's too minor, or it's, who cares? Yeah, or we don't have the equipment, or we don't have the money. Often we don't have the money. We don't have the resources to even start that one. So don't. So this is a good thesis advisor because they're trying to get you through. Right? In the same way, in the spiritual life, you need a big enough question, a strong enough question in your heart that will lead you through, that will bring you through to insight. And the role of the teacher when you are doing spiritual life is to, is to help the student ask the important questions, to bring forth the question. The rest is training. You know? When a person really has a question, the real heartfelt question, I know it's all over. I really do. I know that's the most important thing. They need to build the point where they're completely, you know, there's a word, it's not very Buddhist. It's more Christian. Besotten. I wish I had my little dictionary. Besotten. I don't even think it's in there. Soaked. Besotten. Mm-hmm. Not quite right. What would you say in English, besotten? Almost beside yourself.
Possessed.
Yeah. Obsessed?
Obsessed.
Obsessed. Obsessed. Obsessed with the question.
But isn't it in Buddha Dharma the question's already been answered?
But you don't have the question. You're just listening. Oh, yeah. I'm a Buddhist. I want freedom. Oh, yeah, I want essence of mind. That's not here. That's here. My teacher said you're supposed to want to have the essence of mind experience. Teacher said you should know the nature of anicca, dukkha, anatta. Right? I read in the book the Buddha said you should have freedom. That's not your question. That's your teacher's question. That's your fellow student's question. That's the Buddha's question. That's not your question. Do you see what I'm getting at? It has to be raised way, way, way up. As a whatever I am, I worked very hard in my life to get rid of any ams. It took me a very long time until one teacher, a very great teacher, said to me, okay, you're going to use the word lama. I resisted for years, you know. Also, he did that too. When are you going to use it? Something, you know. Stop calling yourself just Mark. Teacher, there's a certain teacher Dalai Lama. He didn't like me using the word Mark anymore. Forget it. You need a label, and the label is Lama. That's what you are. Lama. Okay. So if I am a Lama, I'm really waiting, but helping people mature to the point where their question is in their heart. Do you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Like the question gets in there and I know they're okay. Doesn't mean I won't teach them anymore, but I know they can stand, it means they can stand on their own 2 feet and it's done. I'm just now waiting.
But isn't there a major difference between like being in Buddha Dharma and knowing that the answer's been, the question's been answered, and then being in science and pursuing something that there is no answer to at this point? Like, it's not been written about.
Oh, no. In science, you think it has been answered, usually.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Well, there's quarks, right? There's gluons, and there's quarks, and there's top quarks and bottom quarks, and we have a... Oh, it's gone. It vanished. We have the equations, right?
Yeah.
Finally. We have the equations. So a lot of time you say to someone, oh, what about this? Oh, well, the answer is, here's the equation. equals mc squared. It's, we do it every day. It takes the very inventive mind to go, like when we started on this question of patchiness in New Zealand. Why does Ditlam, this one organism, this diatom, why does it show up here and doesn't show up here? Everybody says patchiness. Well, the word patchiness is not a theory.
Is patch like patches?
Patches.
Like,
here,
like
and here, yeah. And here. Why is red here and red over here but not red everywhere?
And why this? This is the only inconsistency.
Yeah, why?
I don't know.
So they say patchiness. But that does not explain why. It's like we know as a child, why is the sky blue? Because it's blue. So you have to feel the question strong enough to go for it. If you have a good teacher will say, go for it. Go for it. I had some very good teachers in my life, non-Dharma teachers, especially in science, who helped me learn how to ask. They always say, ask the important questions. I had one man for a while. He was in Toronto, but he was from Australia. And when I was a teenager, he took me on as a mentor. I wasn't his mentor, but I mean, he took me on. just so the transcription goes. Yeah. He took me on. And he would often say, he'd take me to a meeting, or I'd sit in his office and I was doing some research. And he said to me, what's the question here? What are you trying to do? What is it that what are we going for? Or we go to a big lecture by a famous scientist, and he'd sit beside, he'd bring me there. He'd say, what's the real question? Where's the big question in this? Don't get worried about his procedures and methodology. What's he going for? What is it he's not saying? What is it? Is the important piece of research. Where is it going? This is very good. He's teaching me. Ask the important question. So you have to ask the important question that takes you to God, not the little side one. I want jhana. That's okay, but it's not going to take you to God. You have to ask the big questions and really then eventually be in the big question. It doesn't matter if you're Christian, Kabbalist, Buddhist, doesn't matter. You have to have that desire. And then some people say, well, liberation, desire for liberation is not a question. Oh, yes, it is. It is. It's a question about life. It's a big question. What am I doing? What is it to be human? What is it to have a mind? What is it to have awareness? This is what all these books are. The entire book could be summed up, what is it to be human? What is a human life really about? That's what the entire book is. Okay, here's how you do it. Here's how you go and answer the question. If you think it has the answer, you're in trouble, because then you don't go anywhere. You have to assume you don't know. That's revelation. You have to know you don't know. And you keep doing it. You keep searching. And when you know, you keep searching. And when you know more, you keep searching. And when you know more, you keep searching. There's more. And if you think you know, then work on helping others. More capacity. That's also what jhanas are for. Jhanas are for more capacity for compassion. So you develop skill in helping other beings. If you can read other beings' minds, then what should it be for? To help them unfold. Nothing else. Nothing else at all. Just ability to help the being unfold deeper and deeper. What's the reason for being able to discover previous lifetimes? Only, pardon?
To
be free of becoming. No other reason. So you realize that it's not you anyways. So you shut up. Stop doing that.
You realize what?
That those were not you.
That the
previous lifetimes aren't you.
Oh, okay.
Everybody wants to know their previous lifetime. Why? Because they're clinging to self. If you know about previous lifetimes, you realize that there's infinite.
Yeah.
There's no real you in every moment. Same thing. So really, so much of this is, when are you going to ask the big question? And then let the mind be trained so much that the question is, can actually enter revelation. Enter revelation. Enter revelation. Enter revelation. That's the meaning of Wong, Wong Kur. The transmission of power. The power gets transmitted. The power gets transmitted. Transmission of power. Abhisheka, or the Sanskrit word for Wong Kur, is a little bit different. It means the sprinkling, higher sprinkling of water. Wong in Tibetan is a little bit different meaning, slightly. It means the same thing, technically, but it has a bit of a different meaning. It means power. Because you want power. You want strength. It means strength, power, 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 not weak. I don't know what I want. I want to meditate. If I hear someone say they want to meditate, I know that they have no power. Teach me how to meditate. Yes, but that's not the important part. What's the important part? Liberation. Wanting of full liberation. That's the important part. Without that, you learn to meditate. You see? What do you get? You get exactly what you ask for. You get what you ask for. I want to learn to meditate. Good. Okay, now you learn to meditate. But that's not the reason for meditating. That's not the big question. The big question is, what is the mind liberated? What is, not just one experience, what is it like to be liberated all day long? Freedom. Freedom. You have to want it. That's got to become a big question. A burning desire. I know you're Buddhist. You can't have any burning desires. You better. Look at those beings. Look at these beings. Look at that. You don't think they're powerful? They're all showing power, every one of them. So part of the path of liberation is to gain power, jhana. Strength of mind. To gain power, you need power. But it has to be generous power. It has to be kind power. It has to be compassionate power. It has to be power that is loving and open and clear. So that's the purification, 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 purification. In some ways, that's all you really need to know. It's true. It's really all you need to know. And why does a teacher sit in front of students? To show them power. To show them what to do. What do? Go for it. That's what the ordination is. You know the ordination, the traditional Buddhist ordination? It's called going forth. That's the meaning. Go for it. Go for it. Now you have the protection. Go for it. You have the teaching. Go for it. It's up to you. Go for it. Same with initiation. The higher initiation, traditionally, the higher initiations, the crown, full crown initiation, with all the tantric vows, is the same procedure, came from the tradition of the Buddhist ordination for a monk or a nun. The going forth, the power, you got it. Go for it.
Sure.
So you ripen, so you wait as a teacher, you ripen, like cheese. Right now, yesterday I wanted to taste a local cheese, so I bought a little brie from local area. And it is in my room ripening. You know? I want to see if it's going to ripen. Maybe the conditions are right. It's maybe too cold here. But in the room, I think it is just right temperature for it to ripen. I want to see it ooze. I want to see it, what it's going to be like maybe in a day, one or two more days, to ripen. So what do you do with students? You ripen them like cheese. You keep watering them with water and fertilizer, compost. You throw compost at them, you know? Compost. You know compost? Yeah, you just throw compost at them and water. And hopefully they're going to go, I got a question I like. I'm interested. I like that when that happens. All of a sudden the student, who's not a student, you got to stop being a student. The human being is like, I'm interested. You can tell the eyes light up. They want. And you see the fangs come out. That's a good sign. Not, but. Yeah. Sharp. Like a dog, you know? Like a wolf? Like a wolf. Ah. I want liberation. I can smell it. Any other questions? I hope that dealt with that one. You're still asking what to do? All this meditation, all this meditation training is to get the mind pliable, to be able to ask the important questions. That's called insight. Vipassana is asking the questions. Knowing how to ask the questions, let the mind be completely clear, mindful, sati, hour after hour, day after day after day, ask the question, ask the question, ask the question, be there, and let it come. Let it come. Any others? Any other questions? Any other answers? You have answers. You have answers you'd like to me to speak about? Now you see, I don't know if you brought your sheets, but you see in the, I'm going to repeat myself a little bit here this morning, but then I'm going to, maybe not. In the tetrads, as I said before, each of the tetrads is a doorway. This is how it was taught traditionally, like a citadel. You know, the old cities of Europe were ringed, had a ring, and you have different gates. You come in, the west gate, the east gate, the north gate, four different gates. These are the four gates of the palace, the four gates of the citadel of the town, old town. Each one of these you can enter by itself. You can start anywhere. But you really should start with the body. It's very hard, the other ones. It's too tricky, too difficult. But each one has the ability to lead directly to Vipassana. It didn't say Vipassana technique, to Vipassana as the nature of the way things are, revelation. Yeah? Okay. What is in the way? What is in the way? We say clinging, yes? But when it comes to the tradition of Vipassana, the clinging that is pointed to as the most difficult type of clinging to get through is self, right? Self, self, self. So the model, the way in which self is described by the Buddha is five things. And then you see in your little booklet, if you turn to page 4. One of the great, I'll just wait. Does everybody have a copy?
I have it.
But you haven't memorized. You haven't memorized. That's good.
I can take it.
No, it's okay. You just.
No, it's okay.
Good. You'll see that when it comes to anupassana, contemplations, things to open the door, watching the breath go in and out like this, usually does not have sufficient power to open the doors. all day long. So what you do is you break it down, you go, okay, what's really happening? This is anupasana. So vipassana would be rising, falling, rising, falling. You know, you see in the text, it says, watch the rising, falling. Or the teacher says, watch the rising and falling. You do that. 5 days later, okay, I did that, so what? You need something that bites in. And the way you bite in is the first thing you do is you bite in and go, okay, what's happening with rising and falling? What is the mind perceiving? And the first thing that can happen is you direct the mind, go, well, what is this experience? Well, there is a sensation, yes? You have a sensation of breath. Here or here, you have a sensation of breath. What is that? That is the experience of body. It's the body. And there's an experience of something, some form. Form? Body. And then what else is there happening? There is a mind experiencing the form. Do you see? This is where you have to come to. But if someone doesn't tell you this, you may not actually come to this. So normally we go, my body, yes? Listen to the expression. My foot. What is that experience? A foot, a form, and a mind that experiences the form. That's it. Simple, isn't it? That's where you have to start with insight. Not my foot, but there is something visual or feeling, touch, and a mind that experiences that, yes? We normally call that mind the namer, the one that names. Foot, carpet, robe, flower, right? We do this all day long. How many times a day do we do this? What would you say? How many times a day do we name a sensation, a hearing, seeing, touch, tasting, smelling, thinking? How many times a day do you think? Maybe millions of times a day. At least hundreds of thousands, but maybe millions of times a day. Even if we don't use words, we are doing it. Right? Everybody agree? At least, let's say, let's be so low, 100,000 times a day. Which is how many a year? You see? And how long have you lived? So millions and millions and millions, tens of millions of namings of this and that, subject, object. Carpet. Tonka. House. Sky. Germany. You don't even think about it, right? Oh, it's Germany over there. There's no Germany over there. There's no Switzerland over here. But you do it. We do it automatically, right? Oh, look, Germany. There's no Germany. What do you see over there? You don't even see a landscape. You just see light. And then it gets translated into a landscape. But there's nothing but light. You just go, oh, and then all of a sudden, before you ever see the light, or you think anyways, you go, oh, look, Germany. Or, oh, houses. Oh, fields. Oh, look at the clouds. How many times a day? Hundreds of thousands of times a day. Without even knowing it. So now, oh my God, I could do this. I could teach on this now for a whole week. Now what we do, this is why insight is so brilliant. What we do is we slow it down. We go, okay, this is completely automatic, you know? I think is the German word automatisch? Automatisch? Automatisch. Automatisch. Yeah, I know some German. Automatisch. Out in Swiss, yes? Automatisch. What would it be in Hamburg? Automatisch. At Ruppertal? automatisch. Yeah. So everywhere you go, you know, they go, no, not like that. When I lived in the Canadian Arctic, it was like that too. Every village, they go, no, you can't say it that way. You have to say it this way. Everywhere. So you're teaching a room full of people from all over, and they go, how would you say? No, it's like this. Okay. So it is so automatic. In insight, you slow it down, so you take the automatic away. You start to go, oh, every time there's a breath, there is naming. Automatic. In, out. Rising, falling. Rising, falling. But you're not seeing what's there. What is there in rising and falling? Sensation. Oh, better do it this way. Sensation and a mind that experiences sensation, right? Perceiver and sensation. But normally they come together like this, and we experience my breath, ownership. My body is having a sensation. This is my house. This is my thought. This is my emotion, yes? But as soon, doesn't take too long, a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, as soon as you go very slowly and you touch, there's no me there. There's only touch. And you begin to see that there is a mind that has the experience of the sensation. It's beautiful. What happens is the reactivity, the automatic reactivity begins to come off. Oh, my pain. If you just slow down and look at it, there's nothing but a sensation and an observer, a thinker about the sensation. The moment it slows down, actually the pain can disappear. It can just vanish sometimes. You see? So the first place of insight, of vipassana, is to be able to clearly, and many people cannot do this, takes time, to clearly distinguish that there is form and a mind that experiences the form. Normally they're bound like this. Nama rupa, we say in Pali, nama, the mind, the namer, and rupa is the form, the body, the sensation. Normally is bound like this. For most people, it is stuck, absolutely stuck. There is no knowledge of naming, and there's no knowledge of form. It's just my body. Look at the flower. There's a flower there. There's no flower there. There's a image that impinges the eye. There is no flower. There is no flower by touching. There's simply touch. Do you see the difference? Listen to the language. I have touched the flower. Isn't that stupid? What did you touch? What did I touch? I touched a petal, and I touched that much the petal, and I call it, I touch the flower, as if I know the flower. All I have is a few nerves traveling up and interpretation. I know nothing. If it's automatic, is habitual. So we slow it down. And we start to see what happens. This is where you have to start with insight. And the breath is very good because there's a lot of clinging around the breath. And the breath is subtle. And the breath is life. All kinds of things, as I said the other day, right? Don't want to repeat myself, because I normally do a lot. But to make my point. Yes.
Why is this development in a way for me, babies, they are much closer to the spiritual.
No, they're not.
Not.
No.
Yeah.
You know, some people tell me, you know, my dog is enlightened. Why? Because they don't speak. They just do.
I don't mean enlightened. I mean just still closer.
But they still suffer.
Yeah.
You see, this is not true. The baby is suffering.
Mm-hmm.
The baby goes, if it doesn't get what it wants, what does it do? Wah! When it's happy, it's happy. Oh, so nice. So cute, child, when they're happy. And then they're not happy, and they're happy, and they're not happy. They're just wanting. So to become a social creature, social. What does a human being do? Forget human beings. What does Homo sapien, you know the Latin word for human, what does the Homo sapien as a creature do in life? What is its most important function? Come on, let's strip all the society away. What is a biological creature doing?
Reproduction.
It eats to reproduce. If it doesn't eat, it cannot reproduce well. Right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's doing. How is it going to do? It has to communicate its wants. So what does a baby do? What does a baby do to communicate its wants? No, first. What does a baby do first to communicate its wants? Ah! It uses simple sounds to tell the mother or the father, I want. That's suffering. That is a state of not knowing. It wants. It screams, give me the breast. Give me the bottle. Give me food. Hold me. Put me down. Hold me, put me down, hold me, put me down. You're like a good cat. Hold me. No. You see? It's right from the very beginning. Yeah? It's suffering from the very beginning. I don't know what I want, I just want. Right? Ever had a child do that to you?
Mm-hmm.
They scream at you. I don't know what I want, I just want. You're going, and you are there because you're my body, you provide it for me. Well, adults are the same, they just don't know how to do that. Adults are the same way. They just scream. But they are so polite, they don't scream anymore. They're just screaming, give me something. That's a good Dharma student does. Just get to them. Give me the teaching! Now! That's why they sit in frustration. Really, it is. It's like this. So, to grow and become a social creature requires language. Every other creature on the planet has language, but not the kind of language that we have evolved. But every single creature, including a bacteria, has language of communication and very sophisticated. You have to really, it's good to study biology, you really realize. Every single creature, from bacteria right up, has the most sophisticated communication methods that we are only beginning to understand. Language. Even the creatures in the water are all communicating with chemicals, chemical signals. Very sophisticated chemical signals. All day long they're communicating. The birds, all those sounds, they're talking to each other. And the tree is talking to the birds. All going on. But not necessarily conscious. So for us to build, to do what humans do, we need language and we need self-identity. And self and other. That's not the cause of suffering. The cause of suffering is you actually believe it to be real. You believe it to actually be the way it is. So that's the nature of it. It's no problem. Communication is no problem. It's beautiful. Communication is the most beautiful thing in the world, isn't it? To be able to communicate. But the question is it delusionary communication or is it awake communication? But you see, from the very beginning of the baby, even in the womb, It's the same fundamental thing every human being deals with every single day. I want and I'm not satisfied. And when they're satisfied, it only lasts a short time until they want again. Correct? Isn't that the human thing to solve? But what will society tell you? It's okay. That's the way we are.
Get more.
Yeah. You need more money to buy more. And if you can buy more, you're happy. Well, why are so many people that have so much money on tranquilizers and antidepressants? And that money turns out statistically not to have any bearing on happiness. Zero, except unless you're extremely poor. I mean extreme. Extreme poverty, yes, less happiness. But have you seen how many people with a lot of money are miserable? But what's the myth in our society? What's the myth?
Money makes
happiness. Money makes happiness. Objects make happiness.
But yesterday we said the mind or the Buddha nature already is in us. So would you say the Buddha nature is in the baby already?
Yes. Oh, yes.
But where is it?
It's in the mind. The mind itself is Buddha nature. It just is not recognized. You know, there are some children historically, 5, 6, 7, that suddenly wake up. They realize Buddha nature. Extraordinary children, but they do. Boom, just have it. It's already there. It's already there. You know, you could even say that the wanting, the clinging, is a manifestation of Buddha nature. Because if you look at it, this is how I see it. If you look at clinging, what is it clinging for? It's clinging for happiness. Well, what's really happy is freedom. So it's already there. It's just misguided. You know misguided? It's just not on. The whole teaching of Dharma is to turn all that energy of wanting to want liberation. That's what it is. Just, it's over here. Everybody's looking over here. Go look over here. Or another way of saying it is, everybody's looking out there. All you need to do is look here. Well, that doesn't work either, as it turns out. Because if you look here, all you find is you. No, you want to neither look here nor look there. But you need to turn it towards what is this experience.
But mustn't you have first have the experience of what is not working before you come to the point that you see, oh, let's say money is the solution for my suffering?
For most people, yes. Yes. For most people, they have to get fed up. You know fed up? Fed up? That's a funny expression. If you get fed up, you're happy. No. But it's we say fed up. Enough is enough for most people. But you never know. Maybe in your teens you get that. Maybe in your 20s. Maybe in your 30s. Maybe in your 40s. Maybe in your 50s. 60s, 70s, 80s. Until that's enough. Nothing really works to make me happy. I've tried everything. Some people get it. They take a long time. Some people take a short time. Some people don't even need that. They just have it. They just see it. No, not possible. Not possible. So, yeah. And you never know really when. Unfortunately, that's too bad, because some people have to go through a lot of mental suffering before they go, this doesn't work. This simply doesn't make me happy.
Then it's maybe you could say it's a natural process of human development, because more early or late everybody will come to the point.
No, they don't, unfortunately. I agree it's a natural process, but unfortunately many people, even though they know they're suffering, never ask the big question, which is, what is more? So that is why there is teaching. Otherwise, you don't need to teach. People just say, okay, teach me how to do it. But they don't even ask the question. This is because the society, partly, the society is not asking the question. It's distracting away from the question. So if you grow up that way, you don't know any better. It's like addiction. You simply don't know. It's like, it's literally, you know, in my mind, and this is traditional too, it is like being infected with an illness when you're born, and you simply don't know that you're really sick. Because it's okay. What is illness in German? Krank? 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 Yeah, krank. Sick. But you don't know it, because everybody's sick. Could you imagine if everybody had the flu, everybody's going all day long, right? Everybody's coughing, and everybody you know. No. 1 million people are all coughing every day. And one person shows up and say, what are you doing? You know, they'd lock them up. You're sick. They'd say, you're so healthy, you're sick. They would say, you're weird. You're an alien creature. We need to lock you up. But this is exactly what it's like. It's like having a stroke from when you're born and nobody tells you, because everybody is chasing after the temporary, immediate happiness. How many people watched the wedding of Kate and William? How many? Yeah, but how many people in the world? 2 billion people.
2 billion.
2 billion people. Biggest sporting event ever. Except maybe World Cup. Why? Could I be happy too? It's a romance novel. What's the biggest selling novels? What's the biggest selling books on the internet? E-books. Romance novels for women. It's a romance, right? Could I be happy like that too? Fairy tale. And people all know they're not going to be happy forever. But they're happy right now. You see, the delusion is massive. But boy, does it sell. Wow. So where do you start? You start with the fundamental delusion that this is my body. This is my feeling. This is my thought. Just take a look at a thought. Frank. Is it my thought? Do I own it? Did it come from me? I can't find that it did. I have no evidence. So this is what you do, you see? It only takes a little bit to start to see that there is a perceiving, a knower, and an object of the naming, the knower, right? Nama rupa. All insight meditation starts with nama rupa. So basic. But do you know how many people today, they skip all that and they can't even tell the difference? They say, oh, well, the window is my mind. My mind. The window is my mind. The sky is my mind. It's all mine. It's too mushy. Way too mushy. At the fundamental level, they still are going, my body. Or not even knowing that they name all day. So a lot of insight meditation is at the very beginning is to see the naming process all day long. And how frightening that is. It can get frightening, you know. You'll puke your guts out. Puke, vomit, your guts out. Why? It's incredible. You'll see all day long, microscopically. You know microscopic? Every hundredth of a second. There is naming. The mind cannot stay. It must have an object. And name, 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 name. It's sickening. It's like, and exhausting, yes? You should feel like that. That's dukkha. Dukkha, the insight of dukkha is recognizing how tiring this is. Just how tiring the naming process is. How this binding of nama-rupa. Nama-rupa, 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 nama-rupa. Is so tiring, it uses up so much energy. Right? So you watch the breath. That's perfect. It is your body, it is your spirit, your holy spirit watching it. Clunk, clunk. Isn't that right? Clunk, clunk. Breathing in. You know, sometimes in insight retreat I like this. People come to me and they go, I am so tired of saying rising, falling. Rising, I am so fed up. Can I just stop saying it? Yeah, you can stop. And then they go, oh, and they go, I'm still doing it, even when I don't say it. And now we're getting somewhere. So you're still doing it. That's right. I'm not even saying it, but I am following it. You see, so this is good. This is dukkha. This is seeing that the mind is labeling subject, object, subject, object, subject, judgment, subject, object, and is joining together hundredth of a second, hundredth of a second, hundredth of a second. And it's... Yeah, yeah, that's good. I go, hallelujah, dukkha, dukkha, heavy. And then it changes. It's light, it's open. So this is where you start, knowing nama rupa. When you stick your foot out, I like this, the foot, you know, it's a good measure. Or your hand, stick your hand out like this. Does there need to see, does there need to be a label, a naming? Notice I don't do this anymore. I just do this.
I didn't do it yet.
Yeah.
Some did.
Only over there. Oh, yeah. I have to watch when I'm over there. Let's call it an English faux pas. You see? What actually is this? It requires a lot of processing mental power to actually perceive that. But this is too difficult with the eyes. Way too difficult. So you need, it's much easier to use touch. Much easier to use touch. Something physical that comes and goes, comes and goes, comes and goes, comes and goes. If we just open our eyes like this and look at things and go, ah, it's empty. But be very careful, it's not intellectual. Physical is good because, by the way, I'm not in any way criticizing. My main path, my main practice has always been Mahamudra, so that's where I really started. but you have to be very careful that you get very physical. Is this touch what we think it is? So that's where it starts. That's why it's good. So the whole process of insight of breath is to pick up the change of touch and be clearly able to discern nama, the mind that perceives mind and a form, mind and a form. Even if you know and you've been trained, if you think in biology, as we are now conditioned, 30, 40 years, my mind is my brain, which is not true, by the way. No one's ever proven that. Mm-hmm. We've never proven that the mind is the same as the brain. Right? No one. Many neurophysiologists say that's not true. Even if we study the brain, the mind is something that emerges from the brain. Emergent property, we say. Emergent property. So, can you distinguish the difference between the mind that experiences and the form? This is not easy to do. So you see, we then have anupassana. We break it into, on page 2, each of the senses, we break it down. We need to know each. This is, you think this is like baby steps. This is big baby steps, really good deep baby steps. We need to be able to identify each sense and when there is mind and when there is object of mind. Otherwise, it's way too complex, way too difficult. When there is hearing, you need to know there is hearing, that there is a mind that experiences a form. When there is seeing, you need to be able to go seeing, not just seeing. The moment the seeing occurs, the moment the hearing occurs, the moment the touch occurs, the moment the taste occurs. So what we do often in insight is we go rising, falling, which is touching, touching. And then you notice that you're seeing, seeing. Hearing. Do you see? What this is going to do is it's going to create space. Space enough to see that each sense moves in turn around, and that every time the sense changes, everything falls away. It's gone. If I hear, my thinking stops for a second. It's gone. So do I. I go too. So this is what I want to bring you this morning, is the place you start with anupassana is you start by close touching, or here, rising and falling, feeling, till you can distinguish very clearly the mind that experiences and the sensation that happens. That's the body. You know nothing about the body but sensation. You know that, eh? If you're looking like this, and you feel the belly, what do you know about the body? The only thing you know is the touch. Isn't that fantastic? This is so cuts through illusion. Shrine. Tell me what I know about the shrine. What's the only thing I know about the shrine right now?
Sound.
Yeah, sound. 1 millimeter of contact, and I go, the shrine. Isn't that amazing? Mm-hmm. Few millimeters of contact. What do you know? You say breath. Touch. Taste. Smell. Seeing. Hearing. Seeing. Hearing. Seeing. Touching. Tasting. Do you see? That changes everything. What happens about thinking now? We need to treat thinking. Thinking in insight is exactly the same as any sense. It is a sense organ of which the heart, the base, is the brain, but it's also here. Okay? So we need to be able to also, this is where it becomes very powerful, wherever there is thinking, or some people would go emotion, wherever there is thinking function, we need to treat it exactly the same as any sense. Because it is. You'll see that eventually. It is. But it is very rapid and feels, thinking feels like a different sense. But it is a sense organ. So unless you do this, all you do is you go touch, 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 touch. And you don't realize the mind is continually picking up sense data in the same way that touch happens, and the same way that you think. So when you go, when you think, you just say thinking, and you catch thinking, and then you have a visual object for 2 seconds, 1 second, and you go, seeing, seeing, seeing. And then a boat goes by, you hear hearing, 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 hearing. And you see each sense move in turn, right? And if you were very, very quick and sharp, you would see there's no self there. That's how, no self. There's no self happening. The self is a thought that arises about reference to you. Like any other reference, it's identical in nature. Interesting, eh? So this is where insight starts. A lot of time spent sense, 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 nama rupa, nama rupa, nama rupa, nama rupa, nama rupa, nama rupa, all day long. All day long. Until you begin to see, where is myself and where is me in this? Do I need a me to hear? Do you need a me to hear? Do you? No. Do you need a me to see? Do you need a me to taste, touch, smell, think? No. It's very direct. Yes.
Do I need a me to question?
No. No. You think you do because a question is just a thought. It's like any other. So people then they come to me and say, I had an important thought. I love this in insight meditation. I had a very important thought. What is it? Well, I was thinking, thinking, thinking. I had this most amazing vision of Thousand Arm Chenrezig. It was fantastic. It was so beautiful. It was 30 feet high. It was radiant. It was every single arm was clear. Yeah? I saw everything back to rising, falling. Why? It's just thought. Nice thought, right? But we can do that. Wow, look at that. Look at the lake. Look at that flower. Oh my God, look. You see, this is the over, what do you call, idealistic sensing type, eh? Oh, wow, wow. This, look, Anicca. They do that. You watch this, eh? Anicca. No, it's a flower petals. Oh, look, it's Anicca. No, it's just flower petals. Anatta, shunyata, shunyata, shunyata. No, it's just flower petals sitting in a dish with paper. What's your problem? I'm slightly evil, you know. But you think about this. Which lake do you want the bigger than the better lake? Look, I know the biggest waterfall in the entire world. Let's go there. Is that going to do it? Oh, I saw a Chenrezig this big today, but tomorrow, next day, I see it 40 feet high. Which one's better? You see what happens? It's the same thing. It's collecting things. I had the best coffee last week. Who cares? What about now? Even that's not important. Do you perceive nama rupa? All the same. So I don't care how good the question gets. How good the thinking is, it's still, when it comes to insight, it's still thinking. When it comes to human development, yeah, I want to hear which question you got. But when it comes to real insight, I don't care what the thinking is, it has to be recognized as thinking. At the moment it arises and the moment it ceases. Recognition. Do you see? Recognition. So, when I say, which I didn't say, I was not the inventor of this, Vasubandhu, right? Almost 2,000 years ago. When he says that enlightenment is understanding the cognitive process, he's right. Cognitive process. You have to slow it down so you see it's illusory, that it falls apart. That there is no bird moving here, right? It is simply a play of the mind. It is movement of what?
Seeing.
And interpretation. The cognitive process interprets. Oh, look at the bird. There's no bird. It's a shape in the mind, right? It's a shape in the mind. Is it moving? No. It has intervals that appear to be moving. So you have to slow it way down, way down, way down, way down, way down, way down, until it breaks. So the word that is used, if you turn to the, this, now I could go on for days teaching this. It's fine, maybe some other day, other week, other time. But when you come to the insight section, you want to hear? This is what you have to do. Okay? Does the yogin review the rise and fall of all formations without remainder or only one? Answer, grasping the characteristics in various subjects. That's the sense objects, sensing, subjects. Or other meditations. He becomes familiar with rise and fall and causes that knowledge to fill all formations without remainder. Everything you experience. Bird moving, clouds going, breathing, digestion, food, everything is rise and fall. The whole universe. Without remainder. Nothing's left. You know? Even your wife or your husband is rise and fall. Right? That's all. Nothing left. Everything, even your favorite dog or cat, is rising and falling every moment. Nothing's left, without remainder. It's like a man who, having tasted the water of the sea in one spot, knows all seawater to be salty. Once you've tasted salt water, really taste it, and you've done enough sampling, you know, you spend 1 year sampling. This is insight meditation, Vipassana. You spend 1 year sampling. You know every single body of salt water is going to be salty. You know? Every single thing in the entire universe is transient. It rises and falls. Okay? That's the nature of insight meditation. Do it again and again and again, 100,000, 1 million times. You go, it's all transient. How come someone didn't tell me? They did. You need enough evidence. Thus should it be known, he fills all formations in two ways, by way of object and way of by non-delusion. Okay, I'm going to. All formations, that is everything you experience, all experience, are discerned. Oh my God, they use that word. Discerned. To know. To know exactly.
Yeah.
Discern.
Genau bestimmt.
Discern.
Oh, that was good.
Two cerns.
How many petals? How many petals?
No, I see only one.
How many petals? That's discernment. To ability to see clearly, see very clearly that this is the way it is. Three. Okay. All formations, every single formation, are discerned at the first moment of arising and in the last moment of falling away. Do you see where discernment is? You have to get the mind so sharp it sees the first moment and the very end. If you don't, it's too blurry. You know, you have a film strip. Remember I told you about the film strip? 30 frames, or in here, I think in Europe, is 25 frames. When you move it fast, it's all a blur. It seems like one. But when you see each one, each frame, it changes. You know, I mean, you know the old style computer monitor? You know the CRT screens? Ever seen that with your eyes where it goes? I don't know if you've ever seen that.
Mm-hmm.
The refresh rate? I can see that. If I just look at a computer monitor, not the laptop, not LED, but the old ones, like this, you'll see that. If you start to see that, everything you see on the screen changes. No longer a movie, it's no longer, it's just a screen. That's what you need here. Each movement of the bird, the piece of paper, or what, cardboard, or whatever it is, steel, I don't know, moving. It takes the blur away, the continuity, you know, that everything's endless. All formations are discerned at the first moment of arising and the last moment of falling away. If you don't do that, you don't see clearly. It doesn't work. Must be exact. They are empty before the first moment of arising and are empty after the last moment of falling away. They're empty. What does that mean? There's no clinging. There's space. Try it. Go look at Germany. Is it continuous? Just try this. Watch. Just do this. And you will see there is a gap. It's hard to see. There is a moment where when you look, there is no seeing, and then it appears. It's very fast, maybe 1/100th of a second. Can you see it? No, most people can't. You have to really train to see it. Just everywhere you look, every time you look anywhere, there's nothing there. But it's very fast, maybe it's less than 1/100th of a second. I don't know. I experience all the time.
Until the picture is made.
Yeah, the picture comes up. We do this all the time, right now. Hearing, seeing, tasting, touching. There's nothing there.
It's likened to focusing your eyes. Like you look at it, you don't see it, and then your eyes focus it.
That's right. But what is that non-focus? There's nothing there. You'll see there's not even a thought. Okay? Okay, I don't want to give too much. You got to find this. Practice. Day and night. Empty before the first moment of arising and empty after the last moment of falling away, because there is no other arising before they arose and there is no other falling away after fall. When it falls, it's finished. Mm-hmm. Only clinging makes the next moment. It does. It brings up the next moment. Therefore, the knowledge of the rise and fall is the knowledge of the discernment of all formations. Now, just a few more minutes. Thus, the yogin enjoys dwelling upon the characteristics of arising and passing away, discerns the formations as subject to breaking up, and develops concentration, mindfulness. You see, right here is a good example. This is self. You feel as if there's only one petal, one thing. Yes? But insight breaks this up so that you see each individual petal as a unique arising in space and time. Not as an aggregate that you give meaning by name. You see? Only in the aggregation of meaning by name does the self appear. There is no flower. That is what you learned. There is a collection of moments of aggregation that will eventually break up. It's already broken up moment to moment. This is only one form of breaking up. Every breath breaks up. Every thought breaks up. Every body cell breaks up. Today,
How many cells broke up in your body?
20, 30 million cells just broke apart, broke up. How many dead skin cells fall off every day? I think it's maybe 10 million or something. I'm not sure. Just fall off. Just not just the dandruff, but just all over the body. Dead cells just falling off, falling off. How about into your bladder, your kidneys, right? Inside your body, taken away, just breaking apart, breaking apart, breaking apart. Each breath breaks apart. Each breath dies. Then there is a new breath, yes? But it's not the same as the last breath. You see how it works? So the delusion is that that was the same as this and it's all connected. It's actually not. Every movement of that, whatever that is a new movement. It's never repeated the same. It's unique. That lake is never the same one millisecond to another. It's absolutely unique. Does that make sense? It's exactly the way it really is. Even this house is unique every moment. It is changing every moment. If you had a microscope, you could see all the ceiling is falling down. All the walls are actually crumbling, slowly. I don't like to say this to homeowners, you know, because if you have a home, you know what this is like. Right? You come back in a couple of days, you go, why is that? Where's all the dust coming from? It's falling apart.
They got insurance.
Pardon?
They got insurance.
Insurance, yeah. Insurance. It's falling apart. Sometimes it falls apart rapidly when you have an earthquake or tornado. I was just saw on the computer a video of where I sometimes teach in Auckland. Right across the street, a tornado, little tiny tornado, rips the roofs right off. One person killed. Just like that. In Auckland, New Zealand. Just came in like this, a tornado, landed right across from where I teach. Just roofs taken right off. Just like that. Gone. Sometimes fast, sometimes slow. So the breakup is what's important. You have to see the breaking up of formations. Not the movie. You have to see each individual frame in the movie to see what's really happening. Not my life. My life continuous.
But there are certain, let's say, if you said frames or fragments or whatever it is, but there is something. You wouldn't deny that, would you?
Something. Oh, no, I would not deny something. But it's vast, almost incomprehensible what it is. Every time we think we know what it is, it gets bigger. If you say, this is a flower petal, if you say there's a single flower petal, you open up, you find there's two. There's maybe 1 million cells here. As soon as you go in the cells, there's cells, no flower petal. As soon as you go inside the cell, there is chromosomes. You keep on going, you go and you find out there's quarks and gluons, and you're now in the fabric of the universe, and by the time you know it, you're trying to figure out the origin of the universe. There's no flower petal. There never was a flower petal. The physicist would not care about the flower petal. The chemist doesn't care about the flower petal, it cares about the chemistry. The cook uses it for decoration. The horse comes along and you see? They're good. For every creature, at every thought, at every moment, that the thing is not itself. It is something, it's just the name. So there's something there. It's stupid to think there's nothing there. But the vastness of it is incomprehensible. You can only know a little slice. Therefore, it is empty of any ultimate reality.
Empty
of any ultimate reality. It only has a temporary reality for the mind experiencing it. It's a reality. So insight meditation is to bring you to that place where you see that again and again and again until your physiological experience of life changes. And that changes you emotionally. Not a bad way, good way. It brings life. You see life more as it is, not as it is stories. I think that's plenty. So breaking up is important. Nama rupa, and seeing things break apart, not because it's bad, but seeing it actually as it is, as it is. And guess what's going to break apart to relieve the emotional turmoil? The self view. Not because the self is bad, but the self has no ultimate reality beyond like a theater or movie. It has to break up. Otherwise, it feels very solid. You know? Each emotion feels my emotion. This is me. As soon as you use insight, it falls apart. That doesn't mean you can't have a good self. You want a good self. And you can say, this is my book. You can say, this is my book, and what does it sound like in your mind? When you have some insight, what does it sound like? This is my book. Like a hollow echo in a church. It has no real meaning. It just is like almost funny. This is my book. Yep. At the same time. Like singing in a church. It feels like it's open play. Whose voice? The church's voice or your voice? Which one is it? If you sing in a choir in a church, whose voice? The church's voice or your voice? You cannot say, right? So why cling? You can say it's my voice. You can say it's the church's voice. And actually, it's neither. It is just the interconnectedness of all these things. You can have a self, and you can have no self at the same time. You don't have to worry about it. No one's going to die here. Yet. Just a matter of time. Yeah? No one's going to die. Because no one ever dies, actually. There's no being that dies. There's only a apparent theater that dies.
Apparent theater.
A theater, like a theater. Mm. It dies. And then, because of the force of all this mental activity, eventually another theater arises in another form. It's fantastic to figure out what it's doing. I think, any questions about this? This, because tomorrow, I think maybe tomorrow I'd like to prepare for, I've got two wonkers coming up, two empowerments. I would like you to have the entire day to practice tomorrow. That'd be good, eh? And that way also I can prepare, and Jamie gets to prepare, because Jamie needs some time. So that'd be good, full day tomorrow of practice. And also in the evening, you'll have to set up, right? So we'll need the space in the evening. So that'd be good. Then you get a whole day to practice. So this is what I would like you to start with today, and also tomorrow, is just because this is like seeds, is practice now that your mind is so calm. I know your mind is so calm and clear. Is practice not when you feel calm, you get calm, you feel a bit clear. Now focus on the rise and fall. Don't say coming to being and passing away. It's too intellectual. Say rise and fall. Feel the sensation at the beginning. See if you can, it's like a game, it's wonderful. See if your mind can catch the first moment of touch and the ending of touch with each breath. Or here. If it's too hard here, go here, it's bigger. That's why the insight tradition of big. That's from big object. This is much bigger here. Right? This one's very hard, delicate, but it goes very quick to calm, to tranquility here. Very good for the channels. This one, big object. They say, you know, for instance, the teaching of, especially Mahasasaya, they say sometimes, if you cannot feel it, put your hand here. You meditate like this. Then you can feel it. They don't care. They don't care if it's going slow or fast, or, you know, other people do, right? How's my breath supposed to be? They don't care. Feel it. Touch it. Know that you've got a body. All they care about is that you can actually sense the body, and the body vanishes, and you experience what it really is, which is touch. Do you see? Isn't that fantastic? How quick it is. Most people, when they go, I have a belly. Belly, going like this. Wow. I'm meditating. Mm-mm. Just touch. It's the only thing you know. There is no your body. There's just simply a mind experiencing touch. But you might have to do this 100,000 or 2 million times before it dawns on you, because the mind will get very, very sharp until you go, oh my God, there's no me having an experience of body. There's just 100,000 touches per second making up a story. Good. It's cool. Those are good, by the way. Okay, that's plenty for today. See you tonight. Yeah, it was good. It's good. By this powerful practice, activity that we do together, may it lead to cessation of suffering for every single being. Idante punyakamang asawaki wang motu, idante punyakamang asawaki wang motu, idante punyakamang asawaki wang motu. May all beings be healthy and happy, and may all beings be established in a continuum of freedom, perfect union of wisdom and compassion. Sarvamangalam, Sarvamangalam, Sarvamangalam.